This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:05 and you are with Ayman and Chuck on the Evening Edition. And for our next story, we're going to talk about the value of looking outside the box when it comes to job recruitment. And this comes after a blog post by Dominic Cummings, the senior advisor to UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. And he called for weirdos and misfits with odd skills and people who never went to university and fought their way out of an appalling hellhole. So he wants all these people to join the civil service to provide much needed expertise in the civil service.
Yeah, I can definitely relate after that little mess up. This suggests that he's actually looking for more creative people who are able to see things from a different perspective and have had real life experiences to help add a new dimension to the organization. So this actually raises an interesting question about the value of looking at people who have atypical qualifications and experiences to take up roles in the public and private sector.
So I've sort of heard of this kind of thing happening, right? A lot of people have said to me, you know, sometimes the degree that you hold does not necessarily mean that, you know, this is the kind of like area that you'll be working on, like, for the rest of your life. So, for example, there are jobs out there, perhaps an example I can give is an investment company, right? They need analysts, for example. So you don't necessarily have to be someone who is well, have good knowledge in finance matters, for example. What's important is that you have skills in terms of being able to handle large data or being able to see things differently or analyze things in a different way compared to, you know, people who actually have the financial kind of background. So there is value in terms of that. And this comes to mind when I'm talking about engineering students, for example. I know a friend who has an engineering background because, you know, they say that engineers think differently, right? They are very compartmentalized. They think like step one, step two, step three, step four, we do it this way. So that kind of way of thinking can be helpful when it comes to coming up with solutions, for example, or examining a problem that you have and coming up with a way of like overcoming that kind of situation. So it just really highlights the kind of like soft skills or transferable skills that you can bring to a company when you have a different background.
Yeah, I think what Boris Johnson also wants to do is like kind of just like stir things up, right? Because if you can hire the same people over and over again, you're going to get the same result or a similar result. So like for instance, I run a company called Chili Sauce, and we actually don't really hire journalists, even though we actually do write what some people actually consider journalism. So we have weird hires, man. We've got former like pharmacists. We have a chemical salesman. Shout out to all the people in Chili Sauce who might be listening right now. We have a ex-Kazana guy. We have lawyers and so on and so forth. And, you know, we're just basically looking for someone who is smart, who is creative, and you don't necessarily need to have the necessary qualifications. In fact, if you look at a broader picture, I feel like qualifications aren't really as important as they used to be. Like, there's so many other degrees out there, like, you know, mass comm or whatever else, that are not actually required to get that job that is that degree actually dictates for. Mm-hmm. You know, like engineers, of course, you know, like when you say about engineers, you probably need some form of engineering degree to get an engineering job.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, let's say a writer, copywriter, graphic designer, a lot of these people are not coming from the standard degrees that we're used to hearing about.
So we want to hear from you. Have you ever hired or been hired as someone from outside the box? And what was the experience like? You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. After the break, we'll be speaking with Derek Toh, the founder of WOB, who is live with us in the studio today. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's the Evening Edition with Ayman and Chuck, and we are talking about the value of looking outside the box when it comes to job recruitment. And this comes after Dominic Cummings, the senior advisor to UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, called for weirdos and misfits with odd skills to join the civil service. So to take us through this, you know, this conversation about the benefits and perhaps maybe pitfalls of hiring outside the box, we have live in the studio Derek Toh, the founder of WOB. Derek, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to hear that I'll be living in the studio after this.
Oh, no, you're not going to give me crap about that, man. Oh, dear.
Okay, so first up, let me ask you, what would you define as a weirdo or misfit with odd skills?
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I read the article, right? And I think what they're probably trying to do is to kind of find someone that is... as you mentioned, that didn't actually go through the system, right? Mm. And you're talking about someone that is not only a creative person, but probably someone who's very disagreeable. So in psychology, they say disagree in the sense where they don't bow to social norms, if you like. Like they do, like you have personalities that do what they believe is right, right? Mm-hmm. But without bowing to like social pressure and stuff. And sometimes... And because they don't bow to social pressures, like, typically it's very easy to kind of categorize them as like weirdos or like some or misfits because they're different, mm-hmm. right? I think for if you have someone who's like very creative and a very disagreeable kind of personality, when they're right, that sometimes they do come up with some really brilliant ideas. But naturally, someone like this would be very disruptive in nature because... They don't necessarily agree with the status quo, right? They want to change things all the time.
So, like, how would you even go about spotting someone like this? I mean, like, do you look for tattoos? I mean, I would look for a beard, but a beard is pretty normal nowadays already, right? So what do you look for?
Yeah, I think it's... You spot them easily through conversation. Mm. I think, like, when you mentioned tattoos, right? Yeah, I think there was probably a time where a tattoo might be a good signal that someone was kind of like, you know, I'm different, you know, I'm willing to be different. But it is more common now.
Yep.
But when you talk to someone, when I speak to, have conversations with someone, and if they're willing to disagree with me on issues openly, but in a very logical way, right? Mm. Like, they're not fighting with me emotionally. Like, they're having logical conversations with me and they're willing to disagree and they seem very open-minded in the way that they have that conversation. Like, if I say something to them and they'll ask me a question rather than arguing back immediately and then we go through, like, a back and forth for a while, it's a good sign that someone is, like, very open-minded and at the same time very disagreeable. So this is probably the kind of personality that loves creating new stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and they are very willing to... do something and that might be wrong, you know, but they're very willing to take that step because they don't care about bowing to like social pressure.
Mm-hmm. So as an employer, right, how do you sort of assess or evaluate someone who doesn't have the background or who doesn't have the traditional CV? Like, how do you determine or gauge whether, you know, this is the person that will, you know, bring a lot of benefits to our company?
Well, even in WOB, as a startup, right, we mm-hmm. actually hire a lot of people like this because the very nature of a startup is... we are creating something new and it's very disruptive, especially in our early days when we were a small team of less than 10 people. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone that joined us had this sort of personality, right? And that's the reason why they joined us in the first place. Because, and I want to make it very clear, someone who is very open-minded and very disagreeable is not really to say that whether they are intelligent or not intelligent. There's two completely different things. You can have very intelligent people who are not very open-minded, for example, right? They have this a bit more narrow way that they look at things.
Yep.
So when we build a startup, the people that are drawn to it are typically personalities like this, right? Because like they find it so exciting that, oh, we're creating something that's never existed before. We're creating something that says that things should change, right? Something's wrong and we should change things. And I want to be part of that mission. And naturally, that's what they're like.
So actually on that topic, so when you started WOB, you said you hired a lot of these misfits, right?
Yeah.
What's a kind of like ideal ratio? Because like you said, you know, you can't have everybody disagreeing all the time and then that would just be really disruptive.
Yes.
What's the ideal ratio of misfits to quote unquote normal people?
Yeah, I think the challenge sometimes if everyone's like super creative, right? Mm. Or hyper creative and like, and very disagreeable. When you get very big, that you nothing gets done, right? Because people spend all the time just arguing with each other. The thing about people, personalities like this is, on a strategic level, if you have a group of people like this who are willing, who are very open-minded, creative, and willing to disagree, it's very good in order to find the right things to do, the right strategies to use and things like that at that level. Mm. At the execution level, I think it becomes, from my personal experience, it becomes not as useful when you have someone who is, say, overly disruptive.
Right.
Because at the execution level, so basically as your company scales and it gets bigger, right? When on the ground, when you want people to do things, you want to make sure that they, you know, they're diligent, you know, they're able to, I suppose, follow a certain kind of protocol because you want them to execute.
Yep.
But on the higher level, the strategic level, it's very useful to have very creative, open-minded kind of like misfits.
So it's kind of like saying like you don't want a creative engine, like the engine just does what you tell the engine to do, right?
That's okay. Right, yes.
So I'm wondering, how willing are businesses in Malaysia in terms of hiring people from, you know, outside the box? Like, is there a willingness or openness among Malaysian businesses, or are we still sort of like, you know, you have got an engineering degree, you must be an engineer?
I think there are certain technical roles where it will be like that. Like, for engineers, I need someone with an engineering degree. But more and more for most other non-technical roles, like, it's not the same. Yeah, people are very open-minded with it. But I do want to point out one thing, though. A lot of, I think in the past, a lot of big corporate brands attract all the best talent. But of late, recently, because of, like, the boom of, like, technology and startups, you do find a lot of talent drawn to, like, smaller companies, right? The high-growth businesses, startups. And these are typically very entrepreneurial kind of creative talent. That's why they go there. And a lot of big corporations are also interested to hire people like this. Now, one thing I do want to say, though, is that the problem I find a lot of times is they say that they want to hire, but when they hire someone like that, like you imagine, right, you're a big corporate giant, you have protocols, you have rules, all your processes, and then you put in someone's like hyper creative, super like a misfit, right? And someone that's very disagreeable, kind of a disruptive personality, they struggle sometimes when you put them in that environment. So a lot of corporations believe they want to recruit people like this, but when they put them in the company, they don't know what to do with them. And then the people who join these big corporations feel like, I can't move.
Stifled.
Yeah, right. I can't move here. Like, it's not the same. Like, you hire me because you want my ideas. You think you love my energy and enthusiasm. But when you hire me, you don't let me, you don't exploit that part of me, right? Mm-hmm. You just want me to follow the system. So that's a problem.
So this is actually related to our next question, which is actually, are there significant downsides from hiring these kinds of people in your organization? So you talked about one, which is that, you know, they're disagreeable in the execution level. That's what you mentioned, right? And also that sometimes if you don't give them enough freedom, they'll feel stifled. What else?
For the most part, from my experience, it's mainly this. Now, I want to say, though, like, even when I say that it's less important at the execution level, even at what the people that are executing, they are still very creative. They do think outside the box a lot because we're still fairly a young kind of company. But in all, when I look at, I suppose, through the couple of years of building the business, I think those are mainly the two things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking about this now because, you know, it's like the secretary to the UK Prime Minister, Dominic Cummings, he called for this to join the civil service. So I'm wondering, do you think these kinds of talent will bring benefits to the civil service in Malaysia? Will our civil service benefit from hiring these left-field choices?
Yeah, it's such an interesting decision to make. I think I can understand that theoretically why they would do that, because they are trying to like shake up the system. They want someone out of the box. But you know, from my point of view, like one of the things that a government's role, right, is to actually... So this is a challenge. A government should, in my opinion, make sure that things are stable, right? That's a very big part of government. Like the bureaucracy is kind of built in and you don't want to disrupt things too quickly, too much, right? You should things should change. I think everything should get better. But balancing the stability with progress is always something that is a challenge for government. So if you... if you're bringing in people like this who can think out of the box, I think it's very good. But how much are they willing to push that disruption? Because any change, like this, like in Malaysia, right? If a government hires imagine everyone's like this, right? Very disruptive, very creative, right? And creativity, the process of creativity is naturally disruptive. Any decision affects 30 million people, you know? Yeah. So it's not something that, it's not a game that you take lightly.
Yep.
And getting that balance is a challenge.
So we go back to what we were talking about, just not about the ratio.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't want too many disruptive people in the government because then nothing would get done.
Yes. But okay. but I think at a lot of the high level decision making level, it will be interesting to have people like that on the table because that's how sometimes you can find the right answer. You know, so you don't have people who just like follow like a typical ideology or like they really have a set way of thinking. You have people like, I don't really care what ideology, the left or right. I just want to do what is right, what I believe is right. And they share what they believe is right. And you have people like that sharing ideas. I think it might help everyone get to the right answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just, I found it interesting that one of the criteria that he was looking for is the people who didn't go through the university system, but had to go through the nitty gritty or the difficult grinds of life. And I think, like, maybe that is because, like, you know, these people can bring, like, a unique experience or a unique perspective into policymaking. And so these kind of values, right? Do you see like this kind of thing like should be put more in place when it comes to not just the government sector but in public as well, in private sector as well, because businesses are meant to provide solutions to the problems faced by the public, right? So should we rely more on real life experiences, or does the university degree still have a value to it?
I think increasingly you'll find that a lot of organizations are dropping the university degree as a criteria, largely because there's so much inconsistency between grades from different universities. Like a first class in one university is different from a first class in a different university. So what they do is they tend to just rely on their internal assessments, right, to figure out whether someone's aptitude is the right one for them and all that, right? EY was one of the ones that I read recently, like some of the big four are actually doing it right now. But that's also because they hire big groups of fresh graduates. And so they are able to create like a structured assessment themselves, you know, to screen the right people without relying on the degree. And on the other end, you have a lot of startups like WARP and a lot of other, you know, there are many, many technology startups booming right now from conversations when I speak to them also, they don't really care so much about the degree because they are looking for someone who's very creative, very entrepreneurial. And just because you're academically very strong doesn't mean that you can necessarily do the job very well. So they think like this. But in the middle, between like a big corporation with their own assessment and a startup who's like super open-minded, right? I think that in the middle, you have a lot of companies who still do rely on degrees a lot because that is, I suppose, for lack of a better word, the only way they can try to find some kind of way to screen the people that actually apply to them. I don't see that changing very fast at the moment.
So these people that you're talking about, like the people who, I guess, no longer rely on a degree, is there a much more lucrative career for them today than there was, you know, like 20 years back? Like, you know, you can actually do a whole bunch of different things. Because that was my own personal career trajectory, right? I did a whole bunch of stuff. And by the time I was 30-something, I kind of figured myself into one particular career. So is that much more viable today than it was, you know? Because our parents always tell us, no, you know, you still need to get your degree as a backup and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's a tough question, I have to say. I think a lot of people still see the degree as a passport, to your first job, right? And me personally, I actually graduated with a audit, accounting and finance degree.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was actually an auditor for a while, right? But then I switched careers twice. So I switched from auditor to being a headhunter, which is like HR/sales. And then from a headhunter, I'm running a technology company, so I switched again.
Yep.
So I'm one of the few people who I suppose were lucky enough to kind of be able to figure it out, like yourself, right? You try different things and you figure it out. It's not easy to be able to do that. That's why I'm so careful to like give this advice, like, oh, don't go to school. And I'm not sure. School might be useful for some people, right? And I'm very careful to say that.
But actually, does that reflect in the data? So like when people actually like fill out like job profiles or get you guys to actually go out and look for somebody, do they ask for degrees or do they no longer ask for degrees?
I think there are a lot of companies that still look at your degree. Like from what I even heard stories of, like if you were hired by a company without a degree, mm-hmm. right, and you join, there are some companies that wouldn't promote you to manager if you don't have a degree. For example, even though you were performing, which doesn't make sense to me. Like, I understand at the screening level, you're not sure. Maybe use a degree as a way to kind of guess, can this person do their job well, you know? But you've hired them and they're doing the job well. But why would you use the degree as a credit? But it's still, so these things, I still hear stories like this happening, right? Yeah.
We have a message from Sui Lim who says, at the higher levels, most of them got there by following protocol and following orders, hence the lack of highly disagreeable people at these levels. Do you agree with this?
That's a very interesting comment. I actually think that it may be true in some sense. I mean, I worked in corporations before. And in order to climb up in the corporation, you know, you have like quarterly appraisals. They give you like tasks you have to fulfill. And in order to progress, you have to perform your tasks very well, which essentially means you're following orders. Mm-hmm. But I think the people who, but to think that the people that make it to the top are just order takers, I don't think it's entirely true. Mm. I think sometimes in the corporation, right, you have to, because you're working in such a big, giant engine, not only are you doing your tasks very well, you're also very clever in like managing stakeholders, you know, managing upwards and downwards communication. You're also very good at finding ways to persuade people, mm-hmm. right, how to get certain things done. And you may not come across as a disruptive personality, but you are, you know, a lot of people that make it to the top do, they are actually creative personalities, but they maybe it manifests in different ways. It's not as obvious because you can't become like a CEO or like a C-level person if you're not someone that is creative, because creativity is an important element in problem solving. And people who get that are very good at solving problems, just that maybe their creativity is not at the level of, say, a startup entrepreneur, but they're definitely creative people.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so we have one minute left. I just want to ask specifically in the context of Asian culture. So obviously Asians, you know, a little bit more conservative sometimes, maybe not as prone to giving feedback or getting honest feedback. Do you think that misfits and, you know, weirdos would have difficulty with this kind of culture?
Yes, 100%. Yes, and that's why I always advocate about choosing companies with the right culture. You are right. Sometimes I do find that someone who means well, who shares an idea, doesn't get valued because the organization just wants you to
get in line.
Do your work. Yeah, follow this and do your work. So, yes, but I think that increasingly this is changing, though. And it's changing not at the organization level, but at the ground or individual level, just from a lot of influence, like the stuff they see on social media about what a good culture is, about what good leadership is. And I think that does influence a lot of people to be a bit more open-minded when listening to feedback. But yeah, in all, though, like it's not easy if you are someone that is, you know, like a misfit, right? Very expressive. You have to be able to find a way to persuade and share your ideas without being disrespectful.
Derek, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been hearing from Derek Toh, the founder of WARP, who took us through some of the arguments surrounding hiring outside the box. So if you have any thoughts or experiences about this, you can call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So stay with us on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Ayman and Chuck. Just going back to the idea of hiring left-field choices for the workplace, right? We do have a caller on the line. Rizwan, good evening. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, is it regarding the recruitment?
Yes. We hear you have some interesting career decisions.
To start with, I had a background in IT. Mm-hmm. I did the degree in data communication, mm-hmm. so like the software engineering thing. Then I worked as a software engineer for about 2 or 3 years before I switched to a totally different field, which is what is I'm doing now. Is I'm a pilot.
Whoa,
pilot!
Whoa, not like, you know, like a video game pilot, you know, like a real pilot.
No, I just said, yeah, okay. Commercial pilot.
So wow.
It's a totally different thing. What I want to share with is the idea of survival.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, because before I get my degree in IT, people are telling me you should get a career in IT, a degree in IT. Everybody is telling me to get a job in IT. But when I came out from my university, mm-hmm. and I got my degree, but there's so many people in the IT field at that particular time. So the job is not really interesting anymore. And the salary is not really good because there's so many people is having the same degree and same qualifications at that particular time. This is back in early 2000. So I was thinking of how do I move on to improve my life and to improve my career. Mm-hmm. So I decided to look for a different field, which I found a pilot is totally different, which you still require your skill, your IQ and all, and you need to study every time. I think it's almost you need to study continuously in order for you to sustain or to maintain your license.
So you took your pilot license while you were still working in the IT job, is it?
I got the scholarship from one of the big airline company. Mm-hmm. So they sponsored my study to... I did my piloting in Australia. So once I finished, then I worked with them.
And what was the transition like, moving from an IT-based degree and trying to get into a job as a pilot? Were there any obstacles that you faced, or you know what kind of things did you do to sort of like prove yourself in this new field?
Okay, I share with you the character of the software engineer and the pilot. It's a different thing because the software engineer you tend to work with yourself. You don't have any teamwork. Mm-hmm. I believe you just work with the computer at all times.
Yes.
Whereby, as a pilot, you need to be able to work with other people as a team. So if we do the attitude test, you will fail because your character doesn't suit as a pilot. But my motivation at a particular time is to survive. How to survive at that particular year with basically the motivation is the money. Mm-hmm. So with that motivation, I learned the attitude and the character what required for the pilot. So from there, I changed my attitude and did the test, so I passed. And after that, I keep on telling myself, it's a do or die. It's either I pass the training or I will go back to the IT industry as a junior software engineer.
Wow, that's a really good attitude. Actually, we can hear someone else with some DJ aspirations in the background, huh?
Yeah, that's my kid.
So we hope that's a misfit for the future.
Actually, my wife is forcing me to do this.
Well, Rizwan, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I think that the man, you need to get a good attitude, mm-hmm. and you need to have something a motivational factor. For me, it's the money. Mm-hmm. And the survival skill, how you want to survive in a different world, discipline. Yeah, I need. Yeah, for the fresh graduates, you need the discipline to drive you to progress well in the future.
Okay, Rizwan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a nice weekend.
Yep. You too, Rizwan. That was a very good call. I mean, it was some important points there, right? Like, because you are changing from a different career, IT to pilot, those are very different things. Even though you have like some transferable skills, I'm guessing that there will always be some people who maybe look down or maybe are cynical about your chances about succeeding in a different field, right? So there is the importance of motivation, your own resilience towards facing these new challenges, because it's not easy to change careers.
It's not, I'm sure. And especially like from going from an IT background to being a pilot, the pilot licenses, I'm sure, is not cheap, you know? So he probably had to commit to that, not knowing whether or not, you know, it would actually pan out or whatever. I mean, yeah, real like kudos to him, lah. That's a difficult transition to make, and he actually made it.
So besides talking about hiring left field choices for the workplace, right? We also talked about discrimination at the workplace, because it was found that more than half of Malaysians have experienced discrimination at the workplace, and this is a big problem that continues to, you know, to bug us over here in Malaysia. And we also have had some messages coming in about that. First up is from, let's see, where is it just now? From Ivan, saying, look at the government service, it's predominantly of a certain race. For me, this one, so there are like different push and pull factors when it comes to different jobs, right? So civil service, for example, may not provide a high salary for you. Mm. It may provide things like housing benefits, medical benefits and all that. So it really does depend on like the individual, whether they are more attracted to the benefits or to the salary, and maybe perhaps the reputation of it as well. So if people feel that, you know, they can do more when they're in the private sector, then people will tend to choose that. So the question is, if the government service wants to attract a diverse range of workers, what is their strategy for it? How do they make it more attractive to a wider range of people?
Yeah, I also think there's a key message here that there are a lot of factors at play here. It's not necessarily just pure discrimination. I think we've covered that earlier as well. It could be like, you know what Ayman said, like, you know, you have different career aspirations and certain careers tend to attract certain types of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just going back to the idea of hiring left field choices for the workplace, right? We do have a caller on the line. Sharin, good evening, Sharin. What are your thoughts on this?
First of all, Selamat Tahun Baru.
Selamat Tahun Baru.
Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year. All right. I was actually a special education teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to share, a lot of my friends there still who is still teaching doesn't come from backgrounds from teaching at all. They don't have a degree in teaching. They do have a degree, but in terms their degrees in engineering, accounting, maths, and suddenly they have become special education teacher, including myself. You know.
Right.
So the thing is that when you look into it, it's, you can get the job no matter what, because once you have a degree. But in terms of out of the context, whenever you are there, you will take somebody with real aspirations to eventually endure the special education challenges. You know? And those of people that stays there, they're actually the ones who love kids or right. They love the salary.
So basically what you're saying is that passion would trump your qualifications?
Basically, yes. Because, you know, in terms of special education, in a single class, you only have five students. Five students, you lock up, and sometimes the children will hit you, you know, using a block, using something. It cannot retaliate, you know. Just have to, okay, be cool, talk to the children. You sometimes doesn't necessarily, if you have a PhD, you have a degree, you study in special education, you can handle these people. You need to have the patience to do it. That's the real thing. For me.
Sharin, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Alright.
And yeah, he does make a good point about passion, right? Because just to link it with our caller earlier, who talked about motivation and having that resilience, I think having that passion as well will carry you through any kind of difficult circumstances that you find when you are in this new job. You may find that, for example, it's a bit awkward when you don't know how to do simple things that other people seemingly can do easily, just because you don't have that training, for example. Or if you lack that kind of knowledge or news to complete a task that is seemingly easy for someone else. So having that passion will drive you to, you know, learn new skills quicker, to find the initiative to improve yourself, and you know, work better with the people around you. So passion is also important in addition to motivation and resilience.
Well, I mean, I do agree with you that passion is important, but I think we have one example on Twitter where no amount of passion can actually solve this. So we have a commenter on Twitter called Sharon, who basically says, I won't go to a doctor without a degree. So, I mean, you know, there are some categories where passion can only bring you so far.
Yeah, so for some areas of work, right, some job areas, it is important to have that technical knowledge behind you, especially when if it's life and death situation, for example, doctors.
Unless like, you know, BOMO or like traditional medicine or something, then, you know, it's kind of okay. But yeah, I mean, like in the context of the whole degree conversation, which I think is what a lot of people seem to be latching on to right now on our social media, the whole importance of a degree, I think, is for certain categories, like what you mentioned, like professional stuff, things where you actually need to prove that you know your stuff, like engineering, being a doctor, a psychologist. What else is there? A pilot?
Yeah, pilot. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go for a traditional pilot, you know.
So if you have any more thoughts or comments about left field hiring people from outside the box, or discrimination at the workplace, or even the honest system that is applied, that can be applied in businesses here in Malaysia, do you think those are things that works here in the country? These are the stories that we've been covering today. If you have any thoughts or comments on them, you can always send them in. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Aiman Anchak on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.